SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From Pimlico Racecourse, Baltimore, Maryland, Black Eyed Susan, Pimlico Special Day, a very good morning. Weekend preview at the races, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at the website as well, stevebick.com. Boy, can't complain. Very, very temperate morning and day on tap. Thunderstorms that had potentially looked to hit this morning never came. I heard some thunder. I was up very early and heard some thunder, 3:30, 4 o'clock, but there was, not that I ever saw, a drop. So we are going to be fast and firm, and haven't seen the scratches yet. 11:30 post, first race today. And the stakes action starts about mid-card, starts at the race five. And I think race five, right? Yeah, the Murphy. No, that's tomorrow. Race seven, excuse me. A couple of good allowances mid-card, fifth and sixth. About 1:30, things start to pick up and roll into the afternoon. The ski pat. Trained by Blue, trained by Leon Blusewicz, and boy, an appearance that is going to live right alongside some of the great moments. I think that was the best 45 minutes. Blue has turned in some very fun conversations, including the one we had, I think, two years ago or last year when he was live with me. But that one. Seems to be resonating too. I understand trackside at Laurel yesterday. There there was a little bit of cat kicking going on over Blue. Blue's gonna get a couple of calls, I'm sure. But I get the sense that everybody enjoyed it, and also I think everybody enjoyed. From what I can tell, I got a couple of really nice emails about yesterday's taped the 2 hours that. Filled in on either end of the opportunity I had to be here live yesterday. And the ABC broadcast from 1980, I should try to pull it up. One of the nicest emails I got was about, I'm going to draw a blank on who it was from. I'm so bad at this, but apparently, you know, playing it on the office computer and colleagues that had never heard Cosell, McKay, and really that era's titans on the broadcast front when it came to racing. So I got a big kick out of that. And they were captivated just because it's not that this current era broadcasters are terrific, but there's, I don't know. Certainly when you think about Jim McKay and Jack Whitaker, Cosell, and some of the Haywood Heilbrun, a favorite of mine, and Frank Wright, just everybody that we grew up with, and not limited to the coverage of racing, of course, the way they approached everything, it was just different. And, there's a special, I understood immediately, the special quality. It's funny that I mentioned those names. Let me quickly take, I don't know if I adequately expressed yesterday, both when receiving that, Old Hilltop Award, and Marty McGee will be with us in about 40 minutes. Marty saw my typed, I had typed up some notes, and Marty saw them. And he said, "You're not going to read that." I said, "No, they're notes." But that was enough of a exhortation to, you know, to limit the to limit the discussion. So I think I got most of the right things in, and most importantly, I wanted to drive home my feelings toward the Preakness remaining at Pimlico and the attempt, the potential for an attempt to rebuild here on the hilltop and do something that would have a lasting effect, a positive lasting effect in Baltimore, in the neighborhood. And I tried to drive that home, and it seemed to be well received, you know, certainly by the very local audience. And the alibi breakfast, everything that had been promised, a great atmosphere. And one more time to thank Maryland Jockey Club and you know, Sal Sinatra, Dave Joseph, and George Ann Hale were the committee, as it were, that kind of bestowed this on me. And so I have to single them out. And I'm so appreciative of the recognition. So it was very special, and people have been incredibly kind in print, here online, emails, etc., social media. Thank you. And of course, I, you know, had to talk the origins of the show quickly. You know, John Parada's vision to get the show on Sirius XM. I want to thank the network as well, who has been so supportive. Steve Levy and everybody at Sirius XM, that Steve Cohen, excuse me, that have been so supportive. The network loves racing, and they make time for it 7 days a week. And appreciative of that. But John Parada's vision to get a show, see the opportunity to bring a racing content to Sirius XM. It was John's idea, made it happen. And of course, Joe Gracie and Anita St. Clair, Sam and JJ, who, you know, did pioneering work to establish the show. And ever grateful to Gus Alonso, who recommended that I, you know, come on to Handicap. And, you know, that was 2005, and effectively changed my life. And I'm very appreciative, to say the least. Appreciative of two great days of racing, as you should be, and looking forward to it today. Let me give you a quick rundown of what we're doing. We've got the DRF correspondents, who I also singled out yesterday, whose work is unparalleled, and Jim Dunleavy will join us. Jim is down on the turf course. He might be back by now. He wanted to go down and do some of that Michael Dickinson measuring, you know, of the depth, and see, you know, how firm in you know, in from the hedge out. They took down the temporary rails yesterday, and so, you know, you got a pristine turf course and the inner pads. And remember that, because that, you know, historically that has been pretty good, you know, where there hasn't been, not that there's been that much racing on the surface anyway. You know, they were off the turf. They also canceled the races after, you know, getting swamped last week. So the turf course overall, you know, is lush and looks great, but those pristine inner paths particularly have been very good these 2 days historically. Marty McGee will join us, as I mentioned. We're looking for Andy. I think Andy Beyer is going to, we'll see if we can get Andy in this morning. It would be early. Got Scully and DeRosa, top of hour two. Jay Pribman will be here live at the 10:30 juncture. We'll check in with Hammer, and we'll see about Steve Haskin, too. I haven't heard back from Haskin. I hope he understood what went on yesterday, why we weren't, you know, why I didn't reach him on Thursday. So there's your weekend preview. Nick Tamaro is moving physically. He's got movers literally arrived in the last 5 minutes. So he's tied up on that front. He apologizes and guaranteed to get him live and in person when we are in New York, of course, but no Nick today. And he apologizes, but he, as he said, I'll be very glad. No one loves packing up and moving, to say the least. So I understand. I'm very sympathetic on that front. A couple of notes about racing elsewhere, because we probably won't do much otherwise. You've got some graded stakes, limited graded stake action, Canada and New York and California. Santa Anita, the Las Barrera, the 7 furlong. Sort of post Triple Crown season, you know, post prep season, traditional, you know, get horses cutting back. That'll include Mucho Gusto. It seems like, you know, this is a 5-horse field, and 6-horse field, and Mucho Gusto and Sparkyville pretty much feel like the two. And Sparkyville getting back to 7/8, and of course he won the San Vicente over Desmond, and Mucho Gusto coming back from, you know, his okay third in the Sunland Derby, but Baffert and Michael Lund Peterson's Mucho Macho Man Colt back to 7/8. But they're shoulder to shoulder, and you know, Mucho Gusto feels like he's got a bit of a pace edge as well. He's leaving from the rail, but I don't know. I guess Principe Carlo would be the other potential pace presence, but really feels like Mucho Gusto has got this field a little bit at his disposal from a pace standpoint. Soaring Softly, which is now a grade three, the 7/8 turf race for 3-year-old fillies, that's kind of scaled the heights pretty quickly. 8-horse field tomorrow, the 11th race at Belmont, and among others, Stillwater Cove for Wesley Ward. Wesley's got quite a bit going on this weekend. Jonathan Thomas swinging into action, too. He's got entirely for George Strawbridge, a homebred point of entry out of Reef Bay. And that one coming out of the Matron as a 2-year-old, so 3-year-old debut. There's a few notable seasonal debuts, some 3-year-olds, some 4-year-olds, and even some elders that are debuting. And Stillwater Cove, obviously the major player. Seek and Destroy comes back, the Verrazano filly, for Bob Edwards. Makes her seasonal debut, 3-year-old. The Verrazano out of the War Chant mare, last seen winning the Chelsea Flower, which was off the turf, but you know, you go back to Saratoga, and she kind of has been unlucky. Four races entered for turf, and she's only actually gotten on the grass once. So Clement has got the memories of silver winner in here, too. Feel Glorious for Dean and Patty Reeves and partners Gary Barber with Eye in the Sky, Cassie. And speaking of Cassie raided the entry box for the Celine, the grade three, the mile and a 16th, north of the border, the 3-year-old fillies. And from the rail, Mrs. Weber's Super Charlotte. This had to be Ginny's doing, because Charlotte wouldn't name a horse after herself. So somebody jumped in, maybe Bruce Hill from the farm to name one for sure. Because she would never. They must have snuck this past her, because she wouldn't have ever named a horse after herself. Power Gal, the Gary Barber Empire Maker filly coming out of the Star Chute, and preferred guest, the Society's Chairman filly, the Ontario bred, all Cassie from the rail, 1, 2, 3. And then Bold Script, however, is the favorite. Stuart Simon, who of course won last week. Bold Script took a shot on the dirt for her 3-year-old debut. She's a Spitestown out of the Malibu Moon Philly, Chiefswood homebred. She's 4-5. Gary Boulanger reunites with her for this season starter, Bold Script. And then Above All Names, and that's Bonnie Eshelman. So 5-horse field in the Celine. There you go. That's the action away from Pimlico. Everything else is right here these next 2 days. Have to bring in a couple of pieces of news before the break. And oof, pieces of news that I'm keen to deliver. The first, of course, I didn't have a chance yesterday to give you the latest update on the federal level lawsuit that Gary West has filed, and in Frankfurt in the U.S. District Court. So the suit calls the disqualification unconstitutional, and there's already lots of legal opinions being formulated regarding this. And we're not spending a lot of time on that. It'll go where it goes, and it's just unfortunate, to say the least. It just anguished everybody. And equally sad and really tragic, more appropriate term. There had been news really the last several days regarding Kim Boniface, and the official notice came yesterday of her passing, and it couldn't come at a more awful time for Bonita Farm, for Bill and Barbara Boniface and the brothers and the whole family. This is usually, Preakness time is usually a wonderful time for the Bonifaces, and especially with a Maryland bred with a real chance to win tomorrow in Always Mining. And of course, deputed testimony in 1983, and I put up a picture last night with the sad news. And Olive Racing sends their sympathies to the Boniface family. Kim, an accomplished horsewoman, and you know, part of the Bonita Farm operation. It's just tragic. If you want to send a card or note to the Bonifaces, Bonita Farm, P.O. Box 366, Darlington, Maryland, 21034. P.O. Box 366, Darlington, Maryland, 21034. And if you want to donate, the Maryland Horse Industry Foundation, and I'll send out that information as well. Let's take a break. Weekend preview, Preakness Weekend.
News. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories? and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years. We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky, or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
HorseBills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through HorseBills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the HorseBills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. HorseBills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
We're back at the races. Little Jenny Lewis and Jim Dunleavy joining me. I told everybody, Jim, that you had gone down from the Daily Racing Form, of course, and a prior Old Hilltop Award winner from 2 years ago. I told everybody you went down, you did a Michael Dickinson. Did you use the depth stick?
No, I left my petrometer home today, but
Is that what it's called? The petrometer?
Yeah, in Europe, that's what they call it, sure.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Look at you.
We should all have one.
Everybody should have one for their lawn. What was your discovery? What do you think?
Well, I was a little surprised that it was listed as yielding yesterday, because really, you know, we haven't had much rain since the weekend, and it looked to me like everyone was handling it yesterday. So I just wanted to go down and give it a quick little look this morning. So I went through the tunnel and up, and there's a little dew on top, you know, so the grass you walk on, your boots get a little wet, but it's firm. You know, the base is... It's perfect. It's in great shape for today. They brought the rail down, which has been set at 15 feet. So you got 15 feet of fresh, new turf along the inside. And then, you know, they've only been racing here a few days, right?
And they canceled and they lost a few races last weekend.
Right. So the outer part's fine. Outer part's fine, but the inner part is fresh.
Pristine.
And I always think that's what you want to be running on. You know?
Historically, if front runners that have either gotten over on the inside or who launch from the inside have done very well. And, you know, we do have some really terrific turf races lined up. Mm-hmm. Of course, the Dixie, the traditional turf marathon before the Preakness. So it's good to hear. And frankly, we obviously, after all the – I know that everybody's, you know, 30 times bitten, 31 times shy about weather. This will be the first quality 2 days of weather on a big weekend that racing has seen in quite a while.
Well, you know, I just keep thinking back to last year here when everybody who was here got wet every day, and the races that stayed on the turf went in incredibly slow times, and most of them came off the grass and all the scratches, and it was just it was very disappointing because it was going to be an excellent week, and then Mother Nature kind of got in the way. So we're lucky this year. This is beautiful, and it's supposed to be dry, I think, right through. You know?
Oh yeah. Tomorrow's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Tomorrow's gorgeous.
Right. So we'll be complaining it's too warm now, but that's the way handicappers are. You know?
I love it. I love it. Other pieces of news. There's actually been some interesting and surprising scratch news. Particularly out of the turf sprint, and this came out earlier in the week, right? With we lost both Bound to Nowhere and
Christophe Clément's pure, you know, top
sensation.
Sprinter, pure sensation,
yeah.
who I love to watch, and I was a little surprised at that.
I
tell you, I think the turf's in pretty good shape, and it's only going to, you know, if it's firm now, it's going to be, you know. I was a little surprised by that, but. Christophe is excellent at picking spots for that horse, and he's very, very conscious of the course condition because he's always got an eye on that horse's feet and maintaining his feet.
Very much. Bound to Nowhere, was there? I didn't hear what Wesley's.
I think the work was too fast, is what I read. I didn't talk to Wesley,
okay.
But the worked him 5 days before the race, and I think he thought the horse went a little quick.
Well, then that leaves us with a field of seven today in the turf sprint, which goes as the 12th after the Black-Eyed Susan. And the feature, and not just the feature, we got to mention, you know, one of the things about these 2 days, Jim, and you deal Mid-Atlantic from Monmouth through Pennsylvania and down to Delaware, and I assume that Virginia is going to land in your lap, yes?
Yet to be determined.
Really?
I mean, how far does the Mid-Atlantic go? Does it go from, I mean, does it go from the Finger Lakes to, I mean, yet to be
it
figured
could.
Out.
It could. All right. So somebody that may land in somebody else's arena. Marcus seems to find, it seems like Marcus gets those oddball assignments once in a while.
Of course, you know, Colonial Downs has always been part of, you know, the Maryland circuit.
Yes.
Maryland, Virginia, Maryland. It's a lot of the same people. So we'll see.
All right. Well, let's. What I was leading to is how Mid-Atlantic centric these 2 days are. And, you know, we obviously, one of the stories in the Preakness, and let's start with the Preakness and the Black-Eyed Susan, and then we can, you know, touch on anything that, you know, you've been following story wise. But more so than any other region, when you come to Preakness and there's a Maryland bred, it's a story. It's a major story, and it always figures into the coverage.
Yes, you know, I'm going to sound like a homer today, and I'm really not. I try to be objective. You know, you deal with people on a regular basis. You know, but from the region, but this I think is the strongest group of Mid-Atlantic horses we've seen in the last 5 years since I've been covering the circuit. Always Mining is yet to be tested. He hasn't you know, he's got, we don't know how good he is. He's going to get the class test tomorrow, but he has certainly looked like a good horse, and he's looked like a horse who's getting better and better and better. And I love the way they've handled him, not rushing him into the Derby and trying to get Derby points. And they've kind of stayed on a path that the horses brought them down. You know what I mean? They didn't try to, wow, we've got something here, and we need to maximize it, and we have to find out if we have a Derby horse. And, you know, and that's the natural, you know, the natural thing to do. I mean, that's, everyone wants to go to the Derby. But I like the pattern they've given him, and it's been conservative, but I think he is sitting on his A race tomorrow, and we'll find out how good that is.
And, you know, not only when it came to, you know, plotting a path, Kelly Rubley resisted, you know, some of the trappings, including running to the wood to try to make Derby, because she had had him on the list, and it seemed like, why wouldn't you take a chance? And then when they paired back, I said, you know what? They got the free pass into Preakness with the Tessio. This is a smart move.
I personally like it. I know there are a lot of people who have followed this horse that would have liked to have seen him tested in the Derby, like racing fans, but I love what they did. And after he won the private term so well, they discussed going to either the wood or the bluegrass and taking a shot at getting some points, and they decided against it. And in retrospect, on how the Derby was run this year, it doesn't look like the worst decision, you know, that the Derby was a very rough race this year,
point.
Obviously.
That's a good point.
So they come in here off 4 weeks of rest, and the horses stayed in his own stall at Fair Hill up until yesterday when he vanned down, along with Win, Win, Win. And it's just, it's all systems go, and we'll find out. And I picked the horse on top and in my daily racing form selections, and I put Win, Win, Win second. So that's kind of what I was hinting at before, is I'm going to look like a homer here, but I like both of these horses. And Mike Trombetta's horse was too far back and didn't get the right trip. And both he and
didn't Julian look comfortable. Pimentel, didn't look comfortable
no,
in the mud.
No,
they was climbing. Was doing the high steps.
He was jumping up and
yep.
down. He wasn't handling it
yep.
well. And but he came out of the race okay. They're going to put blinkers on him for the Preakness, and I think that's probably just to get him in the race a little earlier. It's funny, when he started out his career sprinting, he had speed, and the more they stretched him out, the farther back he seemed to drop.
Well, people have been listening to me on this for a month and a half. Rad Ortiz did that, and you know, Ortiz's tendency is to take everything, you know, is to look at a horse and think, oh, this is I'll come with a one run with this horse. That's what he does with everything, and that is his style. It's not with this horse. This horse needs to get into a beat and just go along at a nice even clip, and especially the way he's finished races. You know, even in those spots in the Bluegrass and in the Tampa Bay Derby, he was finishing. And you know, one of the realities. Where's my Preakness PPs? One of the kind of shocking numbers I'm going to give you. Win, 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 beaten a total of 8 lengths in the Derby.
See that?
Despite never lifting a hoof.
That's right.
So I. I'm not going to argue. I mean, I don't have him prominently on the tickets, but I'm certainly using him in exotics because I think he'll be running at the end.
I talked to Julian Pimentel earlier in the week, and I did a little note on him and Trombetta. They've had so much success.
Sure.
They've won 364 races together, 19% win percentage since Julian came to this circuit in 2006. And Julian said, it's not that Win, Win, Win gets in the gate and he starts getting antsy. It's the opposite, that he feels that he gets in the gate and he's so relaxed and he's so calm in the gate that he's just been missing the start by a half step. So the blinkers may just help him pop out of there a little better. And he has a tough post. He's outside, but
Mike wasn't minutes after the draw. Mike said he shrugged it off. He didn't care. He said Julian will find a spot for him to settle. That's a point that should be brought into this. Other than Daniel Centeno, who doesn't ride here regularly himself, there's nobody in this field that rides this racetrack on a regular basis.
It's true.
Other than Julian Pimentel.
Julian and Daniel knows his way around.
He knows the way around, but this is not his, you know, it's only, you know, it's occasionally when some of the trainers that he rides for, from Monmouth and the Tampa types that, you know, that show up in here.
Right. He's very excited about his Mount II Centeno. This is his first Triple Crown ride. You know, he's 6-time leading rider at Tampa. He's won the Tampa Bay Derby twice. Each of those horses went on to run in Triple Crown races.
Without him.
And he was not aboard them. So this is, he's just tickled that.
Well, that's a great story, the two of them, actually.
That they have stuck
yeah.
with him, and now at age like 47, I think.
He's that old.
Yeah.
It's funny because I don't know why, but I don't think of Centeno as having been around that long. It's amazing.
He's 1971, he was born, I think. And,
unbelievable.
Yeah. So I think he came to the States in 2003. So it's, you know, he rode down, he rode in his home country first.
How about that? Well, any other horses in this group that, I mean, obviously, you know, to pick Always Mining, you know, the big hitters, Improbable and War of Will in particular, they clearly didn't grab you by the collar.
Well, I was kind of torturing myself earlier in the week, is do I go always mining, win, 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 war of will, or do I go war of will, always mining, win, win,
okay,
win?
So he is in your mix.
And when you see him in person, he's mind-blowing.
Yep.
He's just that powerful and just a beautiful, beautiful horse, strong and full of energy. And, the idea is just to keep him cool, I think. But I didn't like the rail post again. He had the rail in the Derby, and now he's got the rail here. And that's why I put him third and not on top.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Let's hit a couple of highlights elsewhere. Looking around the card, I have you Black Eyed Susan or some storylines that you latched onto this week?
Let me run through. Let's start today, okay? And there's a few local horses here that I'm all Mid-Atlantic today here. In race five, Saltworks has looked very good for Katie Voss. That's an allowance race, and she's 12-1 on the line. Showed run in debut, but just it didn't fall right, didn't get there, but showed enough ability that I liked the horse second time back, and the horse won off and won its maiden by like 7 lengths last time, so now they move up. Arnaud Delacour has got a lot of horses today and tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I can't, when I'm handicapping mm-hmm. this card, I keep settling on his horses. Eons is running today in the sixth race and scratching from the Murphy tomorrow. The Murphy was just a backup plan.
Okay.
So I think he's three to one with Javier Castellano up today. I think pretty salty in there, but and a little bit of a price too. Not odds on.
Which, say it again. Which what race?
Race six.
Race
six. Eons.
3-1.
Okay, it's 3-1 on the line.
All right.
You know,
big field though.
All
right.
Yeah. Miss Preakness has a few interesting local horses in it too. Mark Reed, Please Flatter Me.
Yep.
Was undefeated in four starts, and they sent her up to the Busher at Aqueduct, one turn mile. Looked like a great spot for her. Just didn't quite work out. She got beat a length. She ran well, but it was tough. She ends up fourth. She's beaten a length. She just got a little late. Well, now she's been off, has a little gap in her work patterns, but then the pattern picks up again, and he cuts her back to 6 furlongs, which she should be tough at, and she's the price in here. And Cal Lynch brings back Congrats Gal, who, arguably like the last year's best locally based 2-year-old filly, not counting Jaywalk, who she was second to at Delaware in a little stake. Beaten about a length and a half or two, but Congrats Gal's a very talented filly, and Cal Lynch brings her back here. I'm just wondering if she maybe needs a race and whether she doesn't want to go a little bit longer than 6 furlongs this year, but we'll see.
A couple of notes quickly. The 1 is scratched out of this, the 7, the 9, and the 13. All right, so you've got, and the 13 was the AE, Best Kept Secret, Bernard Chatters, but Covefi, of course, for Cox, 7-2. Morning line choice, Fighting Mad, which is pretty funny that filly, who knew when we were at Churchill and Fighting Mad runs for the Wests and Baffert, who would have, 2 weeks later, here we are, and
right.
In fact, Fighting Mad, a apt description for the Wests coming out of the Derby melee. Miss Preakness is always a fun race, as is the Chick Lang every year. It's always a good bellwether. I talked to Mark Reed yesterday. He's one of my favorite horsemen. I'm so glad he's back training. Mark has had some professional and personal tragedies that no one should have to go through, in fact. And I root for him so openly. And, of course, Butch's brother. And we talked about Please Flatter Me when she emerged last year. And he just thinks, this is what she wants to do. Said she's doing terrific. He thinks that she'll be a part of the Philly sprint picture all year.
Right, and she's going to be overlooked a little bit today because there are some shippers in there
yes.
who are going to take quite a bit of the money. So there's some value there too.
Excellent. What else?
It's interesting. I'm not saying to bet this horse, but Delacour again brings back Shallan in the Skip It.
Oh, I think she's a single. I'm singling her in the pick five.
Right. I mean,
I don't see how else you approach the pick five without that.
She's a five-year-old. They bring her back. She ended up her four-year-old campaign with a close second-place finish in the TCA at Keeneland, and then just got beat a Zop, got beat ahead, I believe, in the Breeders' Cup Filly Mare Sprint. So they bring her back off the bench today.
And you know, you mentioned Delacour. I hadn't pulled up. A lot of times, I'll print out the first race to see the lines in the form of how many starters. But I'm gonna have to pull up how many starters Arno is sending out over the weekend, because he's a dangerous commodity. I'll tell you who else is dangerous. Not necessarily with you know, obvious win candidates. I kept coming across Michael Matz's name the more I handicapped, and Matz has been successful on this weekend historically.
Right. So
other than the 2006 Preakness, notwithstanding.
Right. So we can go a little deeper.
Go ahead.
How about Black Eyed Susan?
I had nothing clever. I didn't have a single clever idea in here. I thought, and I don't believe that we're getting 5-1 on Brill. I'll tell you that.
No,
that was a crazy number.
It's a very competitive race. It's always shopping. Pletcher, I think, to me in my mind, is certainly the horse to beat. But the locals, I think, are getting dissed here a little bit too. I mean, Les Cetas, Katie Voss, and our super freak Jamie Ness. I think they're better than people are going to give them credit for in here. And we'll find out. They certainly will be the right price to include.
Well, they'll be prices.
Include in some exotics here. They've both danced every dance all spring. And I think Les Cetas was a little short for her last one. The Weber City Miss, which was the winning you're in for the Black Eyed Susan. After she had won the previous race, Katie took her back to the farm for a week. And Les just turned her out, brought her back to the track, and she told me the second week after the race, an old quarter crack acted like it was going to flare up, and she did very little with it. So there's 2 weeks of minimal training. She worked her once, ran her two turns in the Weber City Miss,
where she really, it was an arduous win in a spot where she was what, 1-5, and she she had to gut it out, and she had to gut out a photograph that was.
It's just a bob. They both ran really hard in there. Our super freak and Les Cetas have met three races in a row. The score is 3-0 Les Cetas. But our super freak has not been running for second. She's been trying her and testing her, and she really tested her and looked like she was going to win that last one. And we'll find out. We'll find out how they stack up. That's all I can say. I think Pletcher's horse is definitely always shopping.
I like the other Pletcher.
The other Pletcher is
off topic for Paul Pompa. I thought the other Pletcher was going to be 7-8-1, is going to get completely overlooked. And I thought if you wanted a price, and I actually think Brill, I think the race comes down to Brill and Point of Honor. And I'm going to try to get away in the anchor leg of the pick five. I'm going to try to get away with just those two.
Okay. Yeah. Sure. I agree with you, though, on off topic also. I don't think there's much really separating them. I spoke to Todd earlier in the week. He said they've been looking for a little more in the afternoons from her than she's given them up till now. That they have expected a little bit more for her, and they think it's there, but you have to get it out of her. But she comes into this race, and I wouldn't be surprised. You know, I really would not.
The special, before we wrap, I got to tell everybody, War Story is a scratch. Ron Paolucci not happy, apparently, or War Story always, Ron's name comes out first, but the team not happy on the rail draw, apparently, and are going to look for something else.
How about the distance? Let's just talk. This has been 1 3/16 forever, this race.
Yeah, very strange decision.
It's 1.25 miles now. It starts at the absolute top of the stretch up against the backboard. Yeah, there's a wooden fence up there, and that's where it's got to start, I believe.
Unbelievable.
I don't think it's starting on the bend.
Somebody asked that.
It could. I think it's going to start as far up the chute as you can get the gate. But it's it's unusual.
What? And they said that they thought that the horseman would respond back, as if horsemen can't distinguish between a mile and 3/16 and a mile and a quarter. It's 100 yards.
Right. You know, I talked to Chris Mers, the racing secretary. This was his idea. And he got 14 horses entered, so I can't knock it. That's unprecedented for this race.
True. I won't argue that point. I suppose, you know, the 300,000 might have had something to do with that. I don't know. I thought it was a very odd, and I know figure makers aren't going to be thrilled. They liked having the two races, the mile and 3/16 to compare to each other.
What he told me, though, is he thought of this race as a prep for horses on the fringe that may go on and run
marathons
in the Pacific Classic or in the Jockey Club Gold Cup later in the year,
yeah.
Both 1.25 mile races. So give the horsemen a chance to test their horses. Their older horse at a mile and a quarter, and look at those races.
I think you could have watched your horse gallop out past the line 100 yards, and
you don't like the change.
It's the craziest thing I've ever heard, and the notion that there's 14 horses in it because it's a mile and a quarter as opposed to a mile and 3/16 is insane. Anyway, who do you like in there?
I don't like anybody.
Come on!
I can't sort it out. I look at it.
Mrs. Charles. The Mrs. Charles has got to win this with Rodney Jenkins, Hillwood, and Cordmaker. And if we get 8-1, we'll be happy.
Every horse I look at who I like, I look back again, and there's a hole in them. And it's Cordmaker's got to go from 7 furlongs to a mile and a quarter. How do you do that? He wanted a mile and an eighth.
Because Rodney Jenkins is training.
They cut him back to 7 furlongs he won, and now you stretch him out to a mile and a quarter. What
horses like that?
It's quite a pattern. It's, you know, he's looked great. I really like the horse. I just don't know if I like him in this race that much.
If I can get a decent price on him, I thought he was fun to play with. Tenfold, obviously, this might be a little bit of a coming out party, and he ran here so well in the Preakness last year, and nobody really saw that if there was going to be an upsetter of that Preakness, mm-hmm. it was him and not Bravazo.
Right. I guess I'm a big spread in this race. I've looked at it. I just can't come up with anything.
Jim Dunleavy with us. Jim, before we go, anything from Saturday?
Well, I don't want to take too much of your time.
Go ahead.
But here,
a couple of highlights.
Well, here's a neat story. I like this story a lot in the Maryland Sprint. You know, Always Sunshine is 7 years old.
Who gelds? I want to talk to Ned Allard. Who gelds a 7 year old?
I spoke to Ned yesterday. He's been training very good. Ned has been at Parks for 22 years. He's at Delaware right now. The horse has been working really well at Delaware. Cedeno's been getting on and working him. He's going to ride him. This horse historically runs very well fresh. First start of the year, he comes out. When you give him the winter off and you give him mm-hmm. time off and bring him back, he's very good. I mean, he won his career debut. He won one year. He won an optional claimer at Parks in his first start back. He's been close in the two Aqueduct Stakes in other years in his first start of the year. He's very good fresh. So anyway, they decided over the winter to cut him at 6 years old,
which is very unusual.
Turn 7. It's very, very unusual. Ned said they were not going to breed him. So there was no reason to keep him keep him a whole horse, and that he was still acting kind of studdish.
Really?
And not paying as much attention to what they wanted him
to do. That's unusual when they get up to 5-6. That's unusual.
They said Ned's words were, and my editor in the office when I wrote this, he said he was still acting a little rammy, like a ram. You could say rambunctious, but whatever. He's still acting a little studdish as a 6-year old. Why not cut him?
Wow.
He was one of those horses that was not paying attention the way they wanted him to.
Interesting.
And Ned says he thinks he has seen a difference in him now, and he is concentrating more.
How about that?
So Lewis Field's the favorite in there for Jeff Runco.
Sure.
His buyers tell a lot of the story. He's come back very well. He ran 10 times last year, freshened up. His two races this year were very good. He won first time back, and then he was second to Lakai last time, and no one was beating Lakai that day. He ran a 108 buyer. So anyway, always sunshine. I've always liked the horse, and that's a good side story, I think.
It really is, and it's so funny that it comes up and that you were on top of it, because this morning when I was making some final determinations last night, I said, wow, look at this. They cut him. And I was really, you just, you know, it's very difficult. There's some healing issues and so forth between a young horse and a mature horse.
Right.
So,
I mean, sometimes you might do that if a horse is not comfortable in his hind end. You know what I mean? If he's having trouble and he's just not comfortable back. But that's not the case. This is to get him to pay attention.
That's great.
To what they want him to pay attention.
Ned Allard, about as great a horseman as there is anywhere.
Won a zillion stakes, Ned. There are no records that you could count up the number of stakes he won in New England at that. But anyway, I think Ned's a great guy and a super horseman, so I always like talking to him.
I love it. And of course, I'm hard pressed not to mention a little bit of a root for Wentz and for Will Schwartz and his partner Mainline as Wentz tries Graded Stake Company. And you know, the Murphy right before it, I gotta mention War Film, for those that know the Don Adam program and Cortland Farm. This is the 3-year-old son of filmmaker. And what did she do on this turf course?
Tell me.
She won herself a Gallarette. She was second in a Gallarette. She won an allowance here. She loved this racetrack. So
interesting.
There's my filmmaker, Marty McGee. Get in here.
Yeah. So the Lang is they doubled the purse a couple of years ago trying to get this race graded, and Mattoli won it last year in just spectacular fashion.
Yes, he did.
And they got their grade. Asmussen back in here with another undefeated. Well, Mattoli was not undefeated coming in, but the. His horse, Pyron, today is 2-for-2. And Rudy Brissett has Preamble in here, who's 3-for-3. And I think they're going to settle right off the main speed. So
I can tell you,
interesting race.
When I opened up the PPs and I saw that Rudy had brought Preamble here, Preamble was a horse that he told everybody, all our listeners, about early. I think we either talked right after the maiden win. I think after the maiden win. And he Preamble glowingly. He almost broke into Les Marseilles. He was so excited.
He said yesterday, I spoke to him, he loves this horse.
Yeah.
He won 2-for-2 last year at Churchill and Keeneland. They looked at the horse. They said, he's not going to be, we think he's a one-turn horse. No sense to get him ready early in the year. No sense to try to go longer with him. They freshened him up. They brought him back. He won, and now he comes in here.
There we go. Jim Dunleavy, last thought.
I'm good. I'm done.
You're right. All right.
Turn it over to the A-team.
There we go. We're gonna transition right from Jim Dunleavy to Marty McGee. Mart.
La Marseillaise. Not La Marseille or whatever you call it. La Marseillaise. See, they're saying about pronunciations here this weekend.
Well,
fight!
well, wait a minute, though. In Casablanca...
No. It's La Marseillaise.
We're going to check on this. Jim, do you have an opinion on this?
How do they say it in Louisville?
Exactly.
Versailles.
Exactly. We got somebody that calls Versailles, Versailles, and you're going to tell them how to pronounce La Marseille.
J'ai pris 4 ans de français dans l'école.
Look at you.
Mais certainement.
How many years of French did you take?
4.
4.
Quatre.
Have I already told you my story, the disaster that befell me? Hey, I went to a very small private high school in Hartford called Watkinson School. And the first day I get there, they say, I'm a freshman, and they say, you're going to have to pick a language. You can take Spanish, French, German. So I come home, and they said, you make a decision by the end of the week. So I come home to my parents. I said, we're going to take 4 years of a language. I think they were still offering Latin too. Actually,
well, I was going to say you're old enough.
Exactly.
You know, the Latin was one of the choices.
I know. So I said, they said, well, what do you think? I said, I think I want to take French. And my father said, I don't know. He said, you know, Spanish is big, right? Spanish is growing. This is 1974. I said, yeah, that's probably true. And there was a big Puerto Rican population at Hartford. A lot of Puerto Rican kids at Watkinson. So I went back. I said, I took Spanish. 1990, I moved to Montreal. That French would have come in handy. When I tell you I have not put a sentence together in Spanish my entire life, and I end up in Montreal, and I have no French to fall back on.
Well, I figured I was going, this is way early, when I really had no choice but to take French at Saint-X in Louisville. But then when I went to UK, one of my first semesters, I took Spanish a semester because I figured I'm going to end up on the racetrack, and there's my brother speaks pretty good Spanish because so many of his employees are Latino, and my brother,
sure.
A lot of the trainers speak some pretty good Spanish.
Oh, absolutely.
So, yeah.
Well, my pronunciation there was based on Paul Heinrich in Casablanca. Mm. Play La Marseillaise. Play it.
La Marseillaise.
That wouldn't have gone over as well in the film in Casablanca. It didn't have the same.
And it's Plusca Parfait. That was a no brainer.
That's right.
I don't know.
Easy. I got that right.
Yeah, I don't know why there was a discussion about that, as if it was hard to pronounce.
How much resentment should I be harboring over the mispronunciation of my name?
Oh my gosh. Well, I mean, I laughed, and now I feel bad for laughing. I was sitting right across from you, and you were staring at me, and I was staring at you, and I couldn't help but laugh. Steve Bike. It's phonetic, and B, why wouldn't you have asked somebody how to pronounce it?
Well, who, out of curiosity, I mean, other than people everybody at the breakfast, there was nobody there. I mean, there was a big crowd, but I was shocked that, anyway, I was, as you know, I was touched. I reiterated this morning my appreciation to George Ann and Sal and Dave Joseph, and you know, I was very pleased with the it was everything I'd hoped. I'd never been to the Alibi Breakfast, so it was a perfect occasion to make it a maiden voyage.
Yeah, well, absolutely, it was well deserved. I mean, all the work you put in and all the many steps you touch, you know, all the various topics you address and everything else. So I can't think of a more deserving winner in this day and age.
All right. Very kind. And I was very glad of the reception when I brought up the fact that this race needs to stay here. That produced a nice huzzah from the audience.
Well, you know, I mean, how much luxury do you need? I mean, granted, this place needs to be rebuilt in certain ways, but the foundation of it, I mean, look out there. It looks good. The track looks good. The turf course looks
absolutely
good. The infield looks good. I mean, the grandstand is not good, but why couldn't you rebuild this one spot over here into something nice? And you know, maybe why do they have to spend $560 million or whatever?
They don't.
Why don't you spend a 50 or $100 million?
Well, in fact, it's funny you say that, and it came up in that conversation people listened to that I recorded with Marcus Pollock from Park Heights Renaissance, and he stresses that Joe DeFrancis says there's a very adequate plan for $150 million.
Absolutely.
I know it doesn't fit their agenda and their whatever strategic plan, but I'm sorry. Anne Arundel County needs no help in the form of a super track. This neighborhood, it would be a watershed moment to give a rebirth to this neighborhood, and it could trickle down in every direction from the hilltop throughout the city. And this race has got to stay right here.
Absolutely. I'm 100% in agreement with you.
We're going to let's try to make it happen. Alan Foreman and I today, later on Maryland Public Television, actually, on this topic.
What's Alan's take on it?
Oh, well, Alan, you worry about Alan. Alan, whatever take Alan has is right. Because it's Alan Foreman.
He is a brilliant man.
Oh, my God. He's unbelievable.
He's in the top 10 of all people I've ever met on the racetrack in terms of intellect.
The font.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's dive in, Marty. And we got the weekend has been graced by heavens above. It's going to be a 2 days of dry, fast main track and firm, beautiful turf course.
About time.
Yeah, thank God. We want to start with the feature and work our way around? Whatever you want.
Today or tomorrow?
Yeah,
or
do
what?
Both. Let's do Friday first, because you're prepared. Although I was not that I mind Chuck Cuellas doing Hermes, but there's really only one Hermes.
Chuck Quijas.
I've got no vowels. He's got too many vowels.
Well, he's got a couple of silent consonants in there too, with the H's.
H's and K's, and it's like an eye chart. His name. It's ridiculous. K-U-H-K-A-S? Is that it?
K-U-E-H-A-S, or just one A.
He's also a mystery.
Yeah.
I'm not sure he actually exists, because I have reached out to him. I've wanted to get him on the show, because he is a free-swinging guy.
Yeah.
He is a Dave Kingman handicapper that is not afraid to put 20, 30 to 1 shots on top.
Well, he and Kenny Peck.
Kenny's the mad bomber. Yeah. He's just...
Yeah. I'm gonna tie you on a horse today. In the last race,
ooh,
which is part of your 11 through 14 pick four.
Yes.
I'm going to give you Leroy Sweetie Pie, named for my buddy Larry Horning, the retired trainer here.
Oh, yeah.
I called him Leroy.
Yeah.
So his buddies, Ned Williams and these guys, the Five Hellions Farm and Jack Murray, Larry calls his wife Leslie, who is the aunt of Gabby Gaudette
sure.
and Lacey Gaudette.
Sure.
Their mother, Linda, is Larry's wife's Leslie's sister.
Right.
Well, Leslie, Larry's always called his wife Leslie Sweetie Pie. So this horse's name is Leroy Sweetie Pie. She's first time tag, first time turf, second time Lacey. The race is not very tough, and I think she might win at a price. Number three in the 14th today at Old Hilltop.
Look at you putting the blinkers on, and we're going a mile on the grass, maiden 25. And, folks, you got yourself a get-out race. Get while the getting's good with Marty McGee. I like it.
Yeah. The race before that, DuPont, I have no clue. I mean, Golden Award, when she ran against Electric Forest, and go Google yourself. In the Double Dog Dare, I really couldn't give her an excuse in there. So I think something other than her will win. I can't really tell you after that. Before that, Jim McKay Turf Sprint, I'm sure you and Jim talked about it. Just
two scratches, the favorites. It's crazy.
And New York's Finest, who looked like a contender after that. So 3, 5, and 8 are out of the 12th. I think it leaves it to the 2, 7, or 9, but that's not a lot of help to anybody. Race for that is the Black Eyed Susan. Again, I'm bumfuzzled in here. I didn't really like Cookie Dough. I thought Eulalie beat a soft field at Keeneland. Other than that, I thought it was wide open. I could only get it down to 5 horses in my multi. So I'm going to try and be alive to Leroy Sweetie Pie.
The plan. Okay. Yeah, so. Well, what's Brill going to go off at? I thought 5-1 was a silly morning line.
I don't know. I thought Always Shopping would be lower than 4 for Pletcher, but I thought it was a tough race to figure. I didn't think that Cookie Dough would be favored over Brill or Always Shopping. Let's put it that way.
That's fair. And, I thought the 3-1 there was – I think he could have flip-flopped those odds.
Of course, that is Irad. I mean, people bet jockeys way more than you think. It's just incredible.
That's a good point. And, I'm a huge Stan Gold fan, but I don't know. She's got to run back to the race two back, and even then I'm iffy. I thought that Off Topic had a look. The Pletcher – Dunleavy had some great back information, it's funny because Dunleavy he's from that Brad Free sort of not Brad Free. Brad's a straight handicapper who can then go and do the hard news. So it's similar because Dunleavy's a news guy who gets his hands on information that is exceedingly useful from the handicapping side.
There you go.
He gets nuggets. So he talked about Pletcher a little unhappy with the Pompa Phillies afternoon endeavors that she has shown more in the mornings than she has in the afternoon. But I thought at 8-1 she was a useful tool in here.
I think she's a must use, especially with Johnny V likely to get a real good stalking trip.
Exactly. Saving right
ground.
Behind the speed.
Yes.
Exactly. Exactly right. What are you doing in this wacky Pimlico special? Why? And War Story scratched? Why?
I don't know.
All right. I heard because of the rail, they weren't happy with that. I don't understand.
Why wouldn't you want the rail a mile and a quarter?
I don't know.
So,
I don't know.
Okay. But it's just so wide open. I thought there was not a whole lot of speed in here. You've got Flame Away, and then you've got Wait For It, and you've got maybe Flying the Flag for Graham. But otherwise, I think that Mark Cassie's going to tell LaParue to try and walk the dog if he can. And whether or not he can do that, I don't know. He folded pretty easily in the Ben Ally. But, I don't know what to do there. I really don't.
I picked Rodney Jenkins.
Yeah.
Cordmaker.
I think he's got a good chance. I think Joe Sharp has a good chance with Heavy Roller. I think that Mark Hennig, even off the bench, Carlino.
I didn't know what to do there. I know that yesterday John Scheinman was talking about how Bourbon War demolished Carlino, and that was sort of in the back of my mind. You're to blame on the outside. Yet another one of these handicap horses. Pletcher has got a very pat hand with the handicap division this year, more so than I ever remember. This horse is all right.
Who else are you talking about?
Well, he's got Cold Front, and he's got the one from Florida that misstepped in last week in the Westchester, 2 weeks ago in the Westchester. Oh my God, who was working up like a house of fire and had a great winter, and then did not run well in the Westchester. He was angling toward the oh my God, why am I drawing him? Lucky. Not Breaking Lucky. Oh, for goodness.
Prince sakes. Lucky.
Prince Lucky. Thank
Prince
you.
Lucky. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And he's got a couple of others. I mean, it's he's had a, if you go back and look to January, he's had a very productive year with his older horses. It's a fun addition of the Pimlico Special.
It is. And I'd say the over-under on the Wynn Mutual is $19.
What'd you do in the Hilltop?
Did I even look at that? I didn't even look at that. I haven't gotten to that. Didn't look at the Miss Preakness. I've yet to do my homework.
All right. Well, we'll switch to Saturday.
Okay.
I put up my selections last night very early, and even though I understand the two Chad Browns are nice in here, the North American debut, Nova Sol, then there's Fashion Faux Pas for Delacour, yes, and there's even Make Me Dream for Clement. However, I picked Ebullient, Michael Matz, and that's a filly that can win that race, and I
you are Ebullient, aren't you?
I will accept that.
Yeah, you're Ebullient. Yeah. No wonder.
I just got a very good. I just got a very good J Hovde note, who has come up with the nickname Alibi Bike, as opposed to Alibi Ike. Well done for those that aren't familiar. Let's turn to Saturday. Marty McGee with us. Marty, a Preakness. First of all, your favorite Preakness historically?
Probably my first one.
First one?
1985. When I cold cocked the $100 exacta tax prospect over Chief's Crown.
Wow.
I think he paid 24 and change.
Wow.
So I was like, where have they been hiding this place? So actually in 81, me and my buddy Alan Brown and I left Keeneland Hall at the University of Kentucky and drove to Maryland. We came to the races on it like a Thursday at Pimlico. So I was here one other time before I came in. March of 85, that was my first year here. But I used to always watch the race on TV, of course, when I was a kid. I think the first one I remember was Personality winning in 1970.
Wow.
And then of course Canyon Arrow after that. He wasn't supposed to be on the lead with Eastern Fleet, but he was, and that was a great addition. And then 72 BBB upsetting Reaver Ridge.
That's
30 cents on the dollar. I was like, man, this is a funny game, you know. So yeah, I was entranced already back when I was early teens.
Well, and you hit a couple of real highlights. I got friendly with Red Carroll's son Del Second, and when Funny Side was coming here after the Derby, when I was handicapping, I'm looking through, and I see that Farish and Neil Howard have got this Midway Road. Kind of a funny horse. It's kind of, an allowance horse. So I start to go through charts. I'm digging in the, you know, the, those are the early days of the internet, and I'm digging up, you know, one Preakness chart after another, and I keep going back, and I got, when was the last time Farish ran a horse in the Preakness? When's the last time Farish ran a horse in the Preakness? And I go all the way back to BBB.
Mm-hmm.
My first call up Del Carroll. I said, Del, I said, would Mr. Farish run in the Preakness if he wasn't live? Hell no.
Right.
Hell no. He said, I said, Neil Howard's got this midway road in here. He said, he's going to be 20-1. He said, Mr. Farish, we'll give you leeway. We called, and Dell told me the story. They had just run the week before. Rain was in the forecast every single day of the week leading up to Preakness. He was a stone freak mudlark. And Dell said to his dad, he said, Dad, BBB's doing really well. And so on like Tuesday or Wednesday, I guess he called Mr. Farish, said, you know, it's going to be wet Saturday. He says, if you think he can run well, enter him. 54-year-old Eldon Nelson.
Eldon Nelson.
From Council Bluffs, Iowa, I think, or someplace like that.
Took him
or Nebraska.
Took him coast to coast.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. So anyway, that's how I cashed Midway Road under Funny Side. Because you had to figure out, small field, how are you going to make money with Funny Side, who you knew was going to be 4-5, and finding Midway Road.
Would that perfect a comeback?
Let's look. I don't even remember. All I know is I was in the infield working the barbecue. And all I know is Barry Fry and I walked out of here with hundreds and hundreds, fat stacks, and Barry was so pleased with my handiwork. The exacta paid $120.
Oof.
With actually, Funny Side went off at almost 2-1. Funny Side paid $580.
Who else was in there?
Nobody.
I mean,
Scrimshaw.
Scrimshaw was the second. Who was the second choice?
Second choice was Peace Rules.
Ah.
Who was off the board. Scrimshaw was third.
Yeah. Peace Rules was a pretty good third in the Derby, wasn't he?
Yes.
Yeah. For Frankel.
No, he was second. Empire Maker was. No, Funny Side.
Empire Maker,
Peace Rules.
And then who was fourth? Because
That's what I'm talking about.
If he wins, I win more than Ron Ellis. I promise you. Because I had a $20 pick four landing on him because
my brother
had won the previous race with Honor and More, the Early Times or whatever.
That's right.
I had a $20 pick four landing. I think I was going to win $90,000.
Oh. That's like the story, you know the Northeast Bound story. Oh, my God.
Go ahead.
The owners of Northeast Bound, Bill Perry, they took an all Breeders' Cup, the 2000 Breeders' Cup at Churchill. They took an all Northeast Bound pick three.
Is that the horse that Dale beat?
No, it was Drysdale, War Chant.
Oh, my gosh.
War Chant by the scantest of noses. And of course, Spain won the Distaff, and
Dave Vance's filly won the Juvenile Fillies.
Yes, yes, the Thunder Gulch filly.
Yeah, she paid like $90 or $100.
Well, we were Bill Barbecue Bill and I were in line, and I'm looking through. I said, Bill, look at this Thunder Gulch filly. She's 40-1 or whatever she was. He goes, that's us. So we had hit Spain too, but they would have taken down the whole pool, apparently.
Mm.
They would have made more money on their pick three ticket than they would have made from the $1 million mile.
That is a tough beat.
Unbelievable. They still had a thrill of a lifetime, the late Bill Perry. God rest him. Marty?
He was a nice guy. I liked him a lot.
A hell of a horseman. Yeah. Speaking of which.
He trained for Jack Murphy, who my brother ended up training for right around when Bill was getting sick. Back in the early 2000s.
Mike Vesey, you know, who was his nephew.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. It told me a great story about Bill Perry and Mandela they ended up sitting next to each other flying to Dubai and became friends from that point on. I mean, the two completely disparate people, you know, in the game. Well, that's one of the great I'll give you. You probably didn't know Dominic Aluzio.
I did not.
But you knew of him. Dominic went out to Del Mar one summer to exercise ride. Who do you room with? Gary Young.
Wow.
Became lifelong friends until Dominic's death. Unbelievable. It that's what this game does. It just it brings together people.
It does.
Unbelievable. Preakness, you got an opinion?
Yeah, I think that Improbable won't win. I'm not really going out on a big limb there, but I think I'll run third or fourth. I might play it that way because I really don't have a handle on the Black Eyed Susan to get alive into a horizontal.
Double. Yeah, I know.
Although I do like the races before tomorrow. I think Chad will win the Gallarette with one of his two. I'm just going to use those two, and then I'm going to use just three horses in the Chick Lang, and then I'm going to spread in the Dixie, thinking that both Suge and Catholic Boy are beatable, and then scattershot the Preakness too, and not use Improbable. Or if I play it vertically, I'll probably key Improbable third and fourth because I think he's going to be there, but not win. And can Bob please? what are you? You're laughing at it. What's so funny?
John Nichols.
What do you say?
Sucks getting old like you two.
Does John know we're one day apart, birthwise?
No, he probably does. He listens enough. He listens enough. He's the
greatest. November 15th.
Caressing.
Thank you.
Hey, that's why you were saying.
Oh, okay. Yeah. God. I mean, there's so many things to remember anymore.
True. Yeah. That's right.
That's my excuse. I'm sticking to it.
Well, John, we'll check back with you when you're 59.
Anyway, yeah. If I play it, the horses I've got picked are Another Twist of Fate, Win, Bourbon War, and then War of Will. I think one of those four will win.
I like it.
And if Owen Dale is a fifth horse that I'm going to throw in when I'm betting. I mean, his race in the Lexington was just phenomenal.
It was good.
I was like watching it two or three times already. Man, how did this horse like was shot out of a cannon at the quarter pole?
That's a significant forward move too. I mean, there are two things that have come up about him. I picked him fourth in the Express Bet wagering guide, and I thought that he was very live. And I'm not changing off of my original picks, which was always Mining, Improbable, War of Will, Owendale. Some people think he was with the track. He benefited from the track that day, and then there's concerns about the significant. Jump that he's made, fairly tight timing, 3 weeks, but
I'd like to see Brad win. I mean,
that'd be unbelievable. Unbelievable.
He and I have a real good friend in common, a guy named Tony King. Tony actually stayed with Brad down at Hot Springs the last couple of years, and Tony and I've been thick as thieves for a number of years now. So, yeah.
No, it's his first two Triple Crown starters, and of course Marshall Graham and his partnership, the 10 Strike People. They're bouncing off the walls. That group, Marty. I'd sit here and talk like this an hour and 45 minutes, but
we'll do it next year. How's that?
All right, that's fine. Exactly right. And hopefully, it's right. This is my favorite place to broadcast from, other than Clocker's Corner.
There you go, Mr. Bike. Thanks, Bike.
Marty McGee, everybody. DRF McGee. Let's take a break right here. We'll come back, and we're going to connect with Ed DeRosa and James Scully. We'll get their opinions. Next, Jay Pribman will join us in a little bit as well. Haven't heard from Haskin. I don't know if Haskin, what our Haskin status is, but Hammerly in a little bit. Hammer will provide some Preakness perspective and more. Stay with us. Back to Pimlico after this.